Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're recording this right after the Memorial Day weekend, so everybody's had a great weekend of relaxation. I take that back. Nolan's getting ready to go away for relaxation from what I hear. But let's talk about exciting things happening in studios. Anybody? I'll go first. I'll say mine. Lots of exciting projects. It's fun for me to go into our design studio and see literally everyone on the team kind of working on something different. One specific project is a PowerPoint document template. So it's related. We're building a template, but it's made in US letter size. Well, it's actually landscape and portrait. It's gonna be rolled out enterprise wide, kind of a large financial company for a lot of their analysts to use. But here's the really cool thing. Here's the news part. I just received a great note saying how much the client values everything about the template and the details that we kind of force them to focus on, and saying thank you for making everything come together, and they're really excited to see the final product. So that's the news. I actually got a thank you note. It's a good thing. It's a good way to start my week.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a couple template projects going on, but I just finished a 5-minute animated explainer video for an NGO that's focused on climate and stuff like that, all done in PowerPoint. So we hired a professional voiceover artist, did that. But other than that, everything was done right in PowerPoint using animation and a lot of morph and also, a lot of sweating at times trying to get timing right, because it never quite seems, you think you're doing the right thing by splitting the audio up into sections, which you are.
Yeah.
But even so, with each video output, you're like, that didn't line up. All right,
right.
I'll change it again. So that's a little frustrating. But
that's pretty cool. It's a 5-minute explainer video, but I'm assuming it took longer than 5 minutes to develop.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit.
That's really cool. That fall into our last episode, two episodes ago, where it was like other things we use PowerPoint for. Yeah.
Explainer videos.
Yes. Exactly. We do the same thing.
Well, I've just completed my largest conference of the year, Troy. I honestly don't know how you do it. I mean, I do two or three of these a year, and I'm fried. So kudos to you for being able to.
Congratulations! You are so entrenched in it from the presenter perspective. It's awesome to see how involved a company lets the design team be. But they're fun. They're aggravating.
Yeah, I know.
Some are good to say I'm done. Some are kind of sad.
Regardless, there were still on-site surprises, which just I don't take very well. But it was a success, a booming success. But I'm glad to be back to doing what I love, designing and building presentations, including templates. I, like you, Troy, have a print template that I'm finishing up on. I just created a new template for my oldest client, and transferring 500 slides into that new template. I'm glad I created the old one. It makes it a lot easier. So that's what I'm up to.
Let's talk news. There seems to be a lot. Keynote, along with Pages, Numbers, and GarageBand, is now officially free for everyone via the App Store. Now, it's kind of already been free, but you had to buy a system or a device, but now it's, nothing. Regardless, you don't have to buy anything. You get all that Apple software for free now, which seems to be the way some people are going.
The whole free software thing kind of worries me, especially when it's relied on for professional use. I mean, I'm just theorizing, but Apple has no revenue from Keynote or any other software, so how long will they continue to invest in it and support it at a professional level?
I mean, free software, concerns me. Software from Apple terrifies me, whether it's paid for or not, because of past history. And I think we may have talked about this. So yeah, I have no confidence whatsoever that Keynote will be around in a year or two or three, or that it'll be supported because, you know, they make their money off of phones.
You know, I got a good story to go with that, actually. It happened. So let's see here. What happened earlier this year, or the very end of last year? Anyways, I was on site at a very large conference, and the computers were supplied, or a number of them. The Keynote computers were supplied, which was really the humorous part because I opened them up, started them up, you know, making sure, you know, going to do my tweaks and stuff so I can work with them for the week, only to find that Keynote wasn't installed on them, but Microsoft Office was. Like, guys, so we had to call the rental company, you know, with this new announcement. I could have just said, hey, I'm installing this. So may it will make my life easier in the long run.
What else is going on?
You know, I did a really cool thing. It was a couple weeks ago now, but for Microsoft MVP status, they put on a couple of regional events each year. I don't know if you guys are going to get a chance to. Is there anyone near you? Anyways, I went to the Los Angeles MVP Connection event. So it means it was one of the West Coast ones. I think there's a few. It was kind of neat. I tend to shy away from these events because the MVP program is very code and IT pro focused.
Right.
There's not really a large conversation for me to have. Hi, I use PowerPoint. Oh, really? What do you code for it? I use it. I make really cool things. I do really good work. Microsoft really, really likes to hear what people use their programs for. Oh, okay, great. So how do you code that? Anyways, correct. This event was really cool because it was really it was a really good event. The whole session was on presentation skills because they wanted the people that do coding to be able to kind of present and talk to people a little bit more efficiently and give a little bit of it was really cool. It was a presentation skills training program. So I enjoyed it. It was kind of funny. It was pretty much what I talk about and see every day. And then I get to see it in this environment where I thought I was going to be talking about, you know, R and Python and SharePoint coding and everything else. So anyways, that was kind of a fun event.
Troy, we do have those in Chicago for the middle section of the U.S. Central, it's called. And I think there was also one held in Dallas. I couldn't make it this year. They requested that. Actually, they asked me if I would give a presentation on presenting. And I couldn't do it. So Ellen did. Ellen.
Oh, other news?
Yeah, I do.
There's a lot going on.
There is. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up. Microsoft announced their real-time translator. And
yes,
that was pretty cool. We've got a video to a link to the video in the notes. This is different from the add-in that's been available to PowerPoint, where you an add-in, you can type in text and you can click the language that you want translated. And it does a pretty good job. I've tested it, but it's not. I couldn't use it professionally. This new announcement is for real-time voice translate, I believe, voice translation while you're presenting.
Now, is this on-screen translation?
Yeah, it's subtitles. It's okay. Subtitles.
Exactly.
It's
real-time what I meant. Subtitles. Exactly.
And it's taking your voice. That's what it's doing, right? So it's not doing anything with on the slides itself, right? Or, I mean, it's not translating text on the slide. It's just translating voice.
Right. So the old
I say, I say just.
Just. I know it's kind of a big deal, but this is real-time subtitle voice translation.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. This is the thing I mentioned, I think a couple, actually we had to scratch it because I couldn't talk about it. It was under NDA then. So I did mention, this is the thing I was talking about before, and now it's out and available. It's in beta, and it's pretty cool.
It's only going to get better.
Yep.
Oh, so I got a new feature. Hold on, I got one here.
You go ahead.
This one was also just announced, and if you use, a lot of people may have seen the collaboration, multi-authoring of presentations or Word or Excel, but Microsoft just announced they have this thing called classroom scale co-authoring in PowerPoint Online. So when you read about it, co-authoring, so Google Docs has a co-authoring, I believe, of 9 people can access it. I could be totally wrong there. Microsoft, their co-authoring, when we talked to them and stuff, they said they can get up to 24 people very safely. You know, they're worried about bandwidth and how many conflicts there could be, this and that. Well, this new one, they're basically saying now they've gotten the co-authoring algorithms down so well, you can have a full classroom. So up to 50 people is the little example I read, or 50 students.
Oh.
Teacher puts up the information instructor, whatever we want to call the person in charge, puts up maybe an outline slide deck, and everybody's assigned to certain sections, and everybody can log in. It's Microsoft Online, so it's a presentation shared in the cloud, basically on OneDrive, and everybody accesses it. But everybody can be working on it simultaneously, and they're saying there's no conflicts with working with this many people. The interesting thing, though, is they're directing it very much towards education. I mean, this feature is called a classroom scale co-authoring. I mean, it's definitely there. It's kind of neat.
Wow.
Cool.
When you first said 50 school kids working at once on a, I pictured 50 people on one slide, kind of like a Lord of the Flies type thing, but certainly 50 different sections.
That's funny. There's a lot. Microsoft just announced that coming in June is the release of advanced inking options. And the article we have a link to in the notes can be a little confusing. There are advanced inking options in Office tools. Of course, we're most interested in PowerPoint, and it gives you anything from different pen types.
And
felt
colors.
To and colors, exactly. It's much more advanced. What's confusing is there's also a new pen that's coming out with the new Surface Pro, which
like
gives
a physical
you,
pen? I mean, yes. the stylus? Yeah. Oh, okay.
The stylus, exactly, which has different levels of pressure points. It's a little more, what's the word? Responsive. Yes, sensitive, responsive. So good stuff. I'm excited to look forward to play with it on my Surface Studio.
Cool. Yeah. And one last thing, we now get or are beginning to get chart layouts for Designer. In PowerPoint, and I have not honestly played with it. My understanding is it doesn't design your charts themselves; it just incorporates them into layout. So,
it's got some novelty to it.
Yeah, it's a first step towards incorporating all of your content into sort of these pre-designed design options. So, it's one more step on the road.
It moves it around. You take a bar chart. You got a full width and you click Designer and it says, hey, here's four other options. And there are, six other options. And it can move the chart around. It could reposition, resize.
But it doesn't do anything to the chart.
No, it keeps it still a bar chart. It doesn't change the styling. It doesn't really do much of... Actually, wait, did it change the color scheme? No, I don't even think it did that. The thing I ran into was that it's kind of funny, actually. So you have like a call out that you've added, a text box that says, big burst over it. The burst doesn't move. So the chart moves into a new position, but your burst could be left over somewhere else. It's all evolving. I mean, Designer is a very cool idea. And this is another step that they're actually recognizing objects, basically, as opposed to text boxes and images.
Yeah. It's one of those features. I was doing a training the other day where somebody asked me about it. And it's one of those, this was in the context of me showing a whole bunch of, features that had come out in the last year or two. And this was the only one that they had asked me. And the reason is because it pops up. It's in your face. Yes. And with all these other, great features, people don't even know Morph is there. They didn't know icons are there. They didn't know, all this other stuff is there. They didn't know all the, the photo plugins, you can pull Shutterstock in. But Designer is one that, it might get in people's way, but at least they know about it.
I'll make a plug that I did put a blog post up about how to turn Designer off so it's not automatically there. It still pops up. It's a little bit of a glitch in it. Even though I have it turned off, it shows up at different time points. But I kind of got tired of it, so I turned it off so it's not automated.
Yeah, but I've been noticing it come up more often in places where it used to not.
Yes.
So I haven't turned it off. I just deal with it. All right.
Well, no,
that's it for news, I think, right?
Designer's tough for us because we are usually working in custom designs in the first place. So that can be interesting.
Okay. How many of us have had this conversation?
Hi, Troy. I have a new PowerPoint project. Here's my company template.
Oh, no, this is a slide deck of nicely designed slides.
Oh, exactly. That's our template.
Like I was saying, it's not actually a template. There's no back-end support for those nice slides to help you create new slides with the same layouts, format, and styling. So we'll work on making it into a real template for you.
Oh, how much is that going to cost?
That's about where the conversation goes.
Quick.
As presentation designers, we all have conversations like this with potential clients. Nolan, Sandy, and myself are, well, we're talking about what makes a template, why a real template has tremendous value, and to give some praise to Microsoft for the number of template design features that they have built into PowerPoint, even if they're not always utilized by everyone. So here we go.
So how do we define template?
All right, well, we're going to get into semantics, and this is always a question I have to have with clients. I have to explain what a template is and what it isn't. So I explain a PowerPoint template being a custom design master or masters plus a series of custom layouts, color and font themes, default item set, and usually example slides showing how to use those layouts. That's sort of the base, how I define a template, but then you know, a template package that I give a client can include boilerplate slides, icon libraries, image libraries, tutorials, how-tos, charting styles, design note pages, plug-and-play, you know, icon pages and logo pages, all sorts of like other add-ons.
And the list goes on and on, depending on the client. I mean, it really does.
Oh, yeah. It depends how much you want to spend. It can keep going on and on.
You know, I started using the term, and this is kind of my, I don't say new, I mean, okay, I started using the term a little while ago, and I've started saying full-featured template as a way to open the conversation to what is not a full-featured template or what do they have. And to me, a template is a file that holds the style guide attributes in the presets, the master slides and layouts, and the goal is to enable everyone to develop slides that are consistent as long as they're using the template and they know how to use a template. So yeah, everything you said, Nolan, is right in there.
And Troy, similar to you, I have a term that I use too. It's called completely functional. So
ooh, I like
for
that.
Example, in our little scenario where I said I turned over my company template to you, it's not functional. I hit insert slide and I get nothing, right? So completely functional is how I open the conversation. I go on to say it's an easy to use PowerPoint template that helps ensure ongoing consistency and professional design long after I've stepped away from the project. I literally tell
them, I like that too.
I'd like to work myself out of a job. I don't, but you know, I do say that. And I with air quotes, I describe pre-programmed fonts, colors, content placement. And of course, I've mentioned this before, a 1-hour how-to webinar for your power users. Your users can be much further down the path if they follow this template of creating professional looking slides.
Nice. I think we're kind of hit on this a little bit, but when you first get a deck, you know, how do you know whether it's a template versus a set of slides?
Yeah. I right click on the slide background to look at the layouts, which are typically the default Microsoft layouts.
So basically it's a template if it's using a customized master.
I mean, my 5-second test is I go to the slide layout dropdown on the home menu and, you know, I do the same thing, Sandy. I look to see you know, what layouts are in there. And usually I'm looking for all those extra ones because people inserted slides and you get all those kind of automated layouts. I also look at the paint bucket to see if the color scheme is the default Microsoft one.
Right.
You know, basically if either of those have default values or they're wrong, I know it wasn't a full featured template and I don't really have to look further. I just know that there's a lot of things that need to be improved to actually give it full functionality. Mm-hmm. So do you develop, let's just make sure we're clear on this. Do you develop PowerPoint templates, you know, as client projects?
Yeah, I found myself doing a lot of them the last few years, whereas, you know, 4 or 5 years, I really didn't do many at all. You know, and I do them at all different levels of complexity and involvement. It's not, you know, it's kind of not a product. But, you know, honestly, even though I think we're getting good at them, certainly we've gotten better each time we do them, they're not my favorite things to do because there's so much technical non-design work that needs to go in it, so many boxes to check and things to test, and then so much explaining to the clients what can be done, what can't be done, and there's never a perfect magic button to make it do what they want it to do. And they just require a lot of discipline. You know, again, being very precise about what you're doing, where you're, what order you're doing things in. You know, that said, it's one of the few things we do where we charge project rates, so they can bring in good money. And certainly, you know, we are charging for value. We're charging for all those years of learning and all those things that, you know, under the hood that people don't know about. Anyway, it's definitely one of those definitely one of those types of projects where my 90-day finalization clause comes in handy because they can stretch out.
Yes, I do a lot of them. And more clients are coming to me to train on how to create better slides. And in my book, that starts with a great, strong, functioning template.
Actually, Sandy, you triggered another thought. But first of all, do I develop professional PowerPoint templates? Yeah, we do quite a few. Actually, literally more than 100 a year. All are full featured with the Microsoft presets, but many do not have. Well, how do I want to say this? Many don't have kind of that design by committee scenario.
Sure.
So you know, approving things after the concept design has been approved, we just, you know, rip through them. We have our preset list of all the settings we want to put in place, and we can get them done really quickly. It's those ones where there's an actual corporate branding design by committee. You know, you got to work through things a little bit slower pace to make sure everything gets signed off on, because I want to make sure the final deliverable meets. So yeah, we do quite a few, and I like the ones that are kind of the one-off events. So we just get the approval on the overall look and they say, go to it. We build it out into full template, you know, master layouts, color scheme, fonts, everything. It's with our own decisions and we hand it off to the client and they're happy. But the second part of that is we don't really tout that we do presentation and PowerPoint training as much anymore. It's kind of one of those things that's been moving away. I would say the majority of our training now is for companies that were building out a corporate template, and
yes,
we're going to provide a how to use a template, and we kind of merge that with a how to use PowerPoint efficiently. You know, what are the best practices, shortcuts, tips and tricks, things like that. So yeah, the majority of my training programs actually evolve out of corporate template projects now, as opposed to just saying we do training.
That's the same here, Troy. That's exactly it.
And those templates have the best usability. I mean, everybody knows how to use it, and they leverage actually the features that we built into it. So I think it's always a good thing.
I do a little, you know, template training on ones we create, but you know, I certainly do a lot more just general presentation training. And one of the biggest asks in sort of general training is, how do I combine different decks with different templates? I mean, that is the biggest challenge people have. We call them the Frankendex. And it's, you know, whenever I'm talking to a client, I said, and you know, we can talk about how to combine, you know, what I call Frankendex. They always say, yes, that's what we want, please help us.
Side tangent, but one of the newer topics I've started adding in there, because now the idea of the sections. PowerPoint sections. So one of the new topics I've added into trainings as of late is talking about sections and how to remove them, you know, the right click and remove all, because the Frankendex, as you were just saying, they import the sections from everybody else, and suddenly you end up with like 20 sections down at the bottom that have no slides in them, but the section names are still there. So that's kind of like newer topic.
Yeah, and that's only on the PC where you can bring sections over. I'm still waiting for it on the Mac.
Oh, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, sections do not carry over, which is just a real pain. But topic for another time. So you, Troy, you talk about color a lot, right? With regard to templates and how templates can be can help you use color effectively, and they can be good for presentation. Just talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well, every template my team develops has a customized color scheme, and the distributed template has information slides showing the color scheme with some notes on the importance of using these colors throughout, especially not using recent colors, because it may be the actual color scheme color, but it's not tagged to it. So when you move it to another template, that color is not going to automatically update because it wasn't, you know, tagged accents 1 through 6 or a light dark. You know, I'm really big on color scheme use, and just because Microsoft has put in some good tools for color, and they've expanded. I mean, if you go back to the days of PowerPoint 2003, where you had like, you know, 4 colors and that was it. I'm downplaying that a little, but it was very, very limited. Now we've got 6 accent colors and a light dark scenario. So there's 4 more colors. And if you tag things to those, when you move them around, things update very, very efficiently.
Correct.
When you don't use them, things don't update, and you end up doing a lot of manual formatting, which is what people complain about. So I think that, you know, using the having colors preset in a template is a big deal, and using the colors really makes life easy, especially when you're not the first person with a slide, when you're the second, third, and fourth person, and those colors automatically work to your advantage. It's a good thing.
Exactly. And what I like about it, the colors in presentation and using it in programming theme colors, is the eliminating the desire for personal preference.
Yes.
This helps particularly in a corporate environment. Someone says, "But I don't like green." And my answer used to be, "Well, you change it to blue. What if your audience doesn't like blue?" It eliminates that whole that whole personal preference discussion. And Troy, as you mentioned, I too include reference to why the color scheme has been, and I continue to use air quotes, programmed into the template, because that people seem to understand that programmed term.
Yes.
It's because it's the approved color scheme. And I always include, I do not use reference to standard colors. And you mentioned custom colors. You're talking about theme colors, right? You're not talking about custom colors that can be added in the XML.
Correct. Yeah, I'm saying use the standard theme. Your four light darks and the six accent colors. We do custom coding to add an extra line of preset colors in the XML so that they show up, but that's not what I'm talking about here.
Got it.
Have you guys ever reskinned a template? This is something we used to do at the agency. We would have a standard template for internal work and external if we, you know, weren't doing something custom. But every once in a while, we'd want to do something custom for a client, use their colors and their logos and everything, but we didn't have the time or the budget to do something from scratch. So all we would do is we'd go into the color palette, change a couple of the colors, you know, swap in a new logo, and, you know, hit go, and boom, in like a minute, you have what seems to be a template created just for this client. So we would do that a lot, and it just saved endless amount of times. And I just did that for a client. We had designed the template for them, and he was pitching somebody new. He wanted a new template. And I said, you know, instead of doing a new template from scratch, let's just reskin your standard one. And it worked.
That's an interesting term. I haven't heard it before. But now that you explained it, we actually have our TLC master. And it's kind of a paint by number mm-hmm. template. We go through every single preset. I mean, it's several, you know, it's hundreds of slides. Because it covers every scenario, but it's the base. And we've done some things ahead of time. Now, the custom color scheme obviously needs to get customized, but we have like, here's where to do it and reminders, and the order of things are very important. So we actually have a starting point. So we kind of do exactly what you're saying, though. For one company, we do many, many templates. I mean, we can do up to 6, 12 templates in a month for them. And they're all based on the same concepting. They're all going to be used for the same industry type presentations. So they're slightly customized. So we actually do work a lot from one of their base ones because it already has a lot of the attributes, mm-hmm. change color scheme, change layout backgrounds, but they always have the same set of master layouts. So yeah, I guess we kind of do that for a client that I can think of in particular.
And what's key to that, of course, is a properly built, fully functioning PowerPoint template.
Yes.
Yes. From something that works is,
exactly.
The key.
You know, that's another test of whether something is built correctly. If you change the color palette, then everything with those colors should change.
Correct.
Because if they haven't been selected from the palette, they won't. And there's some times where you actually don't want to do that, but more often than not, you do.
Yeah. So that makes me think of some horror stories. Nolan, do you have any?
With regard to color specifically, not really. I mean, what do you have?
Well,
I
had a client who had light and dark masters, which is cool. Not very many clients use that, even though I always anticipate it. But this particular client had light and dark masters, but they weren't willing to change or tweak the accent colors to accommodate both.
Oh.
So one of their accent colors was the same as their background. Yeah, there was no contrast. So working through that, I would say that was probably one of my biggest nightmares.
You know, mine is the horror story, and it comes up because people think they know what they're doing with the color scheme. How many times have you worked with a template and then you go, why is there no black? Why can't I choose black out of the color? Or no white, no black or white. Those are like mm-hmm. mandatory. You need solid black, you need solid white, but people want to use their other colors. Oh, people can get black or white. I'm like, well, no. Nolan, so on yours, though.
You won't use a dark charcoal, for example, in place of the black?
Well, yes, no. Okay. But you should always have a true black, and especially a true white, because you're going to need it for so many other things.
The white, I understand. The black, I kind of, okay.
Yeah, but you're, yeah. You're,
but how about this one? I was going to say, no, here's going on what you said earlier, Nolan. Whatever you just said triggered this thought is when you make one of the, you said you sometimes don't want a color to update.
Right.
Have you ever had this where the color scheme color is based on the corporate logo? So suddenly they have, and the corporate logo is like an EMF vector. Yeah. So it's actually colorized to the paint bucket, but then you move it to a new template. PowerPoint actually does what it's supposed to and it updates. So suddenly instead of a red logo, because that was accent number 4, now they've got a brown logo because that's the new accent number 4. That would be a scenario where you don't want the colors to change.
Yeah, you're right. I would not put a logo in with any sort of color like tied to the palette, of course. And what I've been doing now, again, sort of, you know, tangent, but I'm now using SVGs for logos for corporate logos. Of course, unlike a PNG, those can easily get recolored. You don't want them to, but they can, but at least they stay vector.
Not a commercial break, but I am interrupting to make a plug for the one and only book in the known universe that does cover PowerPoint templates. Are you guys okay with this?
Yes.
Yes,
Julie Terberg, Echo Swinford co-wrote Building PowerPoint Templates, very appropriately named thing. It was all the way back in 2012. It is still 100% relevant and a great resource on everything we're talking about. Have you guys, do you own it? Have you read it?
Absolutely.
And I refer to it constantly.
We'll include a link in our notes for sure.
So what about, templates? I mentioned in my news that I'm working on a page size template. An 8.5 by 11 page template. What about your page sizes that you're working on?
Yeah, I've done a lot of documents in 8.5 by 11, but I don't think I've ever done a template. That said, any presentation we do, even if it's not a quote template, we're going to set, you know, colors. We're going to make maybe a couple layouts just for, because it's easy. You know, it's not, I tell clients it's not an official template where there will be some layouts that we make for you, but don't think that you're paying for a template. But anyway, but most of the ones I do are 16:9 or 4:3.
Well, you know, technically you can use any numbers for the page size that are the correct aspect ratio. As example, Microsoft made a huge change in the 16:9 presentations. It was 10 inches wide by 5.65 inches tall for a long time. Was it 2013 or 2016 we moved to the newer one? Now I can't remember.
2013.
So then we moved to 13.333 inches wide by 7.5 inches tall. And this is actually a really good thing. I mean, basically,
yes.
The height stays the same. So you have a 10-inch by 7.5-inch for 4x3. Now you have 13.333 by 7.5. The height stays the same. Things fit into the slides when you convert between aspect ratios.
That's right.
Better. The other reason is they actually added added the option to go to the thousands point, because you used to be able to only go to 13.33, but I need 333 to actually make it a true 16:9. So they made some useful things. I've had client templates come in. I just had one that was 12 inches by 9 inches, and it is a 4x3 template, but they were having all kinds of problems of taking their own slides that were in the Microsoft 10x7.5 and putting them into the 12x9 because things were out of position. Even though the right aspect ratio, they just weren't lining up. Again, they had different heights, so PowerPoint doesn't know where to put them necessarily. They may have been using PowerPoint 2013 as well, which also doesn't have as good of resizing
conversion,
or ability,
right,
to change things. But I mean, I've seen all sizes. We also check sizes now. It's part of our checklist. Every incoming project, we look at the page size. Because if it's not one of the Microsoft defaults, we actually question the client to make sure, like, hey, we're going to give this back to you in this page size. Is that what you guys use on a corporate level? Or is this a presentation somebody gave to you and you want to make it work with your corporate level? We should probably take the time to actually put it into the right page size so that things drop in seamlessly. Just another
Same here.
Templates.
When things come over from Keynote, page sizes are weird.
26 inches by, yeah, there's, yeah, we always can tell.
There was a tip that it came in from Keynote.
Or Illustrator. I received an Illustrator file the other day to rebuild. The point wasn't I wasn't going to be exporting anything. I just had all the native files, and they had designed it in the standard paper size, 11 by 8.5. So I had to reiterate, is this really what you want? This is for print only, correct? And they went, I guess so. So anyway, we got it right.
A lot. Nolan, we do build full templates that are actually PowerPoint document templates. That's the only time we strip out every single one of the Microsoft default layouts. And we start with fresh, because those layouts will mean nothing to a print layout. We're using smaller type. We're using multi-column layouts. We do a lot of templates in that realm now. It's kind of a new medium.
Hey, Sandy, so you were talking about, you know, seeing templates come in from other people that are built wrong. Are you asked to fix those? Do you offer it? Do you run away screaming? What how do you deal with, you know, templates that you have to work on that are poorly built?
You know what? Yes, I get those requests, and no, I do not correct them. I try to explain to them that you cannot, if there's a problem, I can't guarantee that problem will not exist a month down the road when we distribute this to somebody else. The only way I can guarantee the quality and the integrity of the template is if they allow me to rebuild it myself.
Yeah.
Great way to say that. Nolan, do you run away screaming? Do you yell?
Yeah. I mean, I did recently do a fix to a template under duress because the template came in and it actually was built fairly well, but they wanted to make some changes. And I said, look, to do this right, it's a rebuild and it's going to cost you a lot of money. And they said, well, we don't have the budget. And I said, you know, because this is built well to begin with, not perfectly, but well, you know, we'll make these couple of changes. But again, I can't vouch for, you know, other stuff. But I think it's important. It's important to remind people that PowerPoint is XML under the hood. So just like a website, you know, if a website is a disaster, people understand, oh, it's all code and everything. Mm-hmm. That if you asked me to fix somebody a website because it wasn't working, they would agree most likely, oh, I get it. You have to rewrite all the code. The code's just bad. Let's throw it out. It's the same thing with PowerPoint. It's not visible in the same way, but there's code underneath that can be screwed up.
Screwed up, yes. Can be broken and not fixable.
Right. And that happens a lot.
You know, one of the services that we have a lot of traction with that I just kind of started throwing it out there for these type, it was this exact scenario, is, hey, could you fix it? Or it wasn't even that. It was like, hey, can we fix your template? Because you've given us some things to work with here and they're not really going to function well for this type of project. So we do something we call a template technical review. It's where an agency or an internal department sends us their version of the template. I should say their version of the slides, and we fix it to be distribution ready. In reality, we just start with our own customized base template and build a new template using their supplied deck as a reference. Mm-hmm. Pull the art elements. A lot of times we're optimizing those art elements, changing the page size so it's actually right. So technically, no, we don't work on someone else's template. But yes, we do have a service that offers fixing client templates, and we give it at a really good rate just because ultimately we're going to have to work with that template and we want to make our lives easier.
Yeah. It's all in the delivery, the spin zone, Troy.
Yeah, it's right back to our comments. No, you really have a nice set of slides. We can't format those 300 slides from your sales team in 3 days because... Mm-hmm. There's nothing to work with here. We have to manually do everything.
How about if
we do a technical slide review first, a template review? And that's where the conversation kind of started.
That's a good service.
So you mentioned things that can go wrong with the XML coding. So I'll just throw it out there this way. What about add-ons or using other formatting features for template projects? Do you use anything like that?
Well, I think you're getting to Format Painter, right?
Yeah.
Sort of. This is the kind of thing that I only learned, you know, maybe a year ago or within the last year. I think I learned at the last presentation summit that the last thing you want to do is use Format Painter within the template, within your layouts as you're building it. Right now. I don't know if there's a real explanation as to why. We just know that it messes things up.
master slides, master layouts are their own separate XML files, where slide level file, while slides themselves are separate XMLs, but they don't have as much coding. They're relying on coding. So yeah, you just don't want to use the format painter, the eyedropper, and any third-party formatting tools when formatting the master slides or the master layouts. It's almost guaranteed to corrupt things. There's just things that go wrong with the XML.
But I do use Thor. Well, used to be called Hammer Tool. Now it's called Thor. I do use that.
Stevensburg, yes, it's yes, great. Yes,
it is great. But with that, just a little explanation on that format painter. What happens is it messes up the bullets, right? You'll end up getting random bullet
points
on your slides.
That's one of the issues, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's so tempting because as you're going from layout to layout, you're like, oh, I already formatted this text box. Oh, I want to do the same thing here.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's problematic.
So wait, Sandy, you're saying, because I actually don't know this, you actually do use the PP Tools hammer or Thor tool to position things in master layouts with no issues?
I have not had any issues. As a matter of fact, I use it.
Really? Okay, that's a good
but
thing.
But that's not formatting. That's just positioning, right?
Positioning, you're right.
It doesn't. Yep. Other third-party tools that we use, like, if the master slide title bar, at the top mm-hmm. of the slide, your traditional yep. title bar, if it somehow gets broken and it doesn't update it across all the master layouts, you want to put them all in the exact same position. So, the obviously easiest thing to do is use a third-party tool to say, pick up this position and put it on every single one. When you do that, things go awry. So if I use the Thor tool, which I have not
it's
done,
great.
I will make use of that. So well, yeah, things like that for the formatting, Nolan. Just it's pick up and position, but it can actually corrupt things really bad. In those
what is
layouts.
It? I can't remember now off the top of my head. The two content and the comparison layouts don't follow the master.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, those ones have kind of a legacy XML issue.
Weird. Weirdness. Yes. So anyway, I use Thor to fix that.
Hmm.
So we talked a little bit about 4.3 and 16.9. What my some of my clients want 16.9, some want 4.3, some want both. How do you deal with the request for both or either? How do you deal with aspect ratio?
Well, I always ask if there is a need. If a client gives us a 4x3 template, we ask them, they give us a 4x3 slides. You want your template to be 4x3, 16x9? We kind of have that discussion up front so they can kind of realize that there are differences and they don't actually transition seamlessly. I personally don't do the super theme thing where, multiple aspect ratios in a single file. There's just too many ways for it to break. Yeah. It's very, very tedious to code because that is true coding at that point. If needed, we'll just build out one of each aspect ratio, give it to them, label the files, properties, file name, everywhere we can so that people know what the original is, because ultimately somebody's going to take the 16x9, push it into their 4x3 sizing slides, and suddenly they got a squished corporate logo. So we make it known several ways what the original was supposed to be and then tell them to go use it.
Troy, you meant super theme. I think we need to explain a little what's going on with that. With the Microsoft default layouts or the default themes that you get, that you choose, mm-hmm. you can go back and forth. That's under variance, right, Sandy? You can go back and forth between different sizes, right? And it adjusts all the templating. So if a client sees that, they're like, oh, Microsoft can do it. I want that for my deck. It becomes what's called, that's called a super theme, where basically you have two sizes within it. But the problem is, it is incredibly difficult to actually build those.
Yes.
It is very, and right. Just to clarify, variants.
If not impossible.
Variants
for me.
Variants also give you multiple color
right.
themes. So I don't, our variants, I'm not looking at PowerPoint right now. I think you just changed the size in the size.
Oh, you're right. Dialogue. Variants have to do with colors. The yep. size is just you change the page size. But so it's kind of hidden. But if you take what's actually happening, if you take a Microsoft default template and just change the page size, everything adjusts and everything looks great. What's actually happened is there's like two sizes in one in a super theme thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, the word super theme is never even used in the interface. You wouldn't know it, but for us mortals, when you change a template from one to the other, things get messed up. And so, yes, technically there is coding and a way to have it go back and forth easily, but it is just, it's it's, I don't recommend it.
I think Echo was the only one for the longest time that was building them, and she's even
stopped doing it. Yeah. I think. Yeah. So, so basically if you want a 4.3 and you want a 16.9, that's two files, right?
Is that what you do, Nolan?
Yeah.
Same here. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the easiest. How many, just more of a side question, how many requests do you get for 16x9 versus 4x3? I mean, which one gets the dominant?
It's kind of split. I'd say like a third want one, a third want the other, and a third want both.
Okay. Politician answer.
Yeah. No. So there's still a lot of entrenchment on this 4.3, especially for organizations that do a lot of printing.
Exactly. And so a client will come to me asking for a new template, and I have to ask them the question. They haven't even considered the conversion or the change yet. They're not aware that widescreen is available. So it's an education process too.
Yeah.
I would say 50-50. No, really? No, I'm more widescreen.
Yeah. I'm going to say we're probably 75% widescreen.
Yeah.
And the other 25% is split between people that either just want 4x3 or they want 16x9 and 4x3. So they want that combo, but that's, 25%. Mm-hmm. And then we have a whole nother, 10% where it's doing just crazy aspect ratio things.
Right. That, so has there ever been a time where you don't use a template?
Yeah, when I'm lazy. I mean, I don't even bother with layouts or masters sometimes for one-off decks, in which every single slide is custom. Everything would be built off a blank layout, for example. Although sometimes I'll create, specific layouts just for these three slides to make it easier.
I almost always use some form of a template, whether it's like Nolan just described, I'll create three specific layouts for a one-off. But if anything, I'll even start from a built-in Microsoft template just so I have something.
Yeah.
I would say Mac Keynote presentations because they don't really – a template to Keynote is not a template. There's just not a whole lot to design or develop there. One-off photo albums, things that are like my blog post demo slides, they're usually just one master layout. I'll delete everything else out just to keep it really simple. But, when it's a real project, it gets a real template, everything I can think of offhand anyways.
I've also steered clients toward just using a Microsoft default template or an off-the-shelf template when it's clear it's low stakes or low budget.
Yep.
And as I mentioned, I also recently, reskinned a client template for a customized pitch rather than design something from scratch because, it's just saving them money.
Yep, I've done the same thing. I think it's a great alternative.
What do we include in a, air quotes, real template? So we're building a real template, not an A to Z, here's everything we do, but, big scope things. What do you include that would make it a template?
Well, I'll start. In the master, I include multiple layouts, sometimes multiple masters. I program the fonts and colors. I usually don't mess with the effects, and I think we should talk about effects. In the template itself, the slides that are distributed, I have it split into several parts. Part A, I provide an overview of the layouts and instructions for use, defaults, and other how-tos. Sometimes I have charts as templates, instructions on how to create charts as templates. I provide all the blank layouts. I provide example content in the layouts, and I include the one-hour training.
That's an awesome thing, actually, right there.
The training is definitely a good ad. I include all the default Microsoft layouts, those first, eight or nine of them. A lot of what you said, Sandy, but a few extras. A logo plug-in play page I always put in, often an icon library, how-to guides at various levels of complexity, notes on the pasteboard indicating how to use the slide, what the name of the slide is. This is one that I saw in somebody else's template recently, and I'm going to steal. Naming the title placeholders for layouts. So instead of just saying insert title here, you can change that text. You can customize that text. Yeah. So what this person had done was they had named, org chart slide, for example. They put that in the fill-in title here. So it's just right in your face. It says, that's what this slide is for. This is for org charts.
And I will, instead of that, I think that's a great idea, and I want you to continue with what you're providing, but in those placeholders, I use that's the opportunity for directional placeholders. Yeah. So type all caps, one mm-hmm. line, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Style guide information.
Yes.
This add title here. Titles are all caps, bold, Arial, mm-hmm. you know, 42 point. Yeah. We actually make that our default text.
I mean, other things that we can add on, environmentally friendly printing is what I call it, which is basically just setting the black and white and grayscale printing mm-hmm. settings, mm-hmm. which is not, it needs to be done. And it's just a nice little add on. It doesn't take that long. We have offered CRTX files, which are those chart files with lots of caveats, .thmx files we can do. We can consult with IT on how to, and this is another headache.
I know.
I hate doing this, but to get these default, you know, templates to pull up and mm-hmm. not be overwritten and all that kind of, it's such a hassle.
Sure is.
I mentioned this before, but there's a lot of I give clients a menu of these add-ons, you know, everything from, you know, what I just mentioned to sort of the basics. And I think, you know, for those listening who are, you know, selling templates to clients and stuff, templates are a great time to add value and I'll be delicate about this, but upsell clients in that offer them a lot more. And I even with a proposal that I'll have a conversation with people and let's say we agree on, you know, a sort of a medium-sized template. When I give them the proposal, I'll still put in line items for, hey, if you want this, you know, mm-hmm. that's an extra. If you want this, sometimes I'll include prices, sometimes I won't. Like for example, if they just want the 4.3, we've had the discussion, oh, I just want it in 4.3. Well, I'll put in the proposal and, you know, 16:9 or other aspect ratio is this extra price. They might look at that and say, oh yeah, well, we better just do it now. It's not that much. You know, we'll have it in our pocket.
What I'm missing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there are some people, like I'm the kind of person that, you know, when my wife and I go to buy a car, I get upsold. And which is why she tries to keep me away. But, like I'm that kind of person that I want the best. I want to pay a little more. And there are some clients, I just had one last year that just kept asking and asking and asking for more. And I was like, okay, I'll sell it to you.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
It's an opportunity.
Upsold, Nolan. I don't use that term, but we do include a lot of options.
It has a negative connotation.
It does when you say it. But we just did one as well. They asked for one thing, but they had given us samples of some of their other. They actually gave us a sample of their corporate template, PowerPoint template, even though we're working on another project. So I literally put in as a line item, we could do a technical review of their PowerPoint template and listed off just three or four of the things wrong with it. And we listed a few other things because I thought it made more of a full featured package. Like this is what they really want. They just don't know what they're asking for. They signed off on literally it was six extra things. They signed off on five of them. Yeah, I guess we did upsell them, but I thought I was being helpful, not a salesperson. you know, I on the whole template thing, I very proudly tell everybody we build full featured templates. Our template build process goes through something like, I don't know, 290 presets that are customized from the MS Microsoft template files, the default ones. And there's a lot to that. I mean, every bullet level would be a customization if you want to count.
Exactly.
But things go up from there. I mean, that's just like to make a regular template. Mm-hmm. Then we have custom layouts, you know, the thank you, the table of contents, contact, you know, here's my contact information, you know, preset template, again, with those placeholders with informational or instructions on what they're supposed to add there. You know, we do quadrant layout options, you know, here's a whole bunch of extra layouts for building it, you know, one column, two vertical, two horizontal, you know, we do theme and welcome slides a lot. So there's mm-hmm. just a general, no text on it, it's just a beauty slide. The key elements for me in a real template are the fonts are preset for slides, handouts, notes. There's a true custom color scheme. The color scheme has been customized to work with whatever the background is. The table default has been set. So at least when they insert a table, it starts somewhere that makes sense. And all the placeholders on all the layouts have been adjusted to fit the background styling. That should probably cover mm-hmm. the core basics of making a real template a template.
So how many layouts does that end up being, do you think?
You know, we start, I think Microsoft has 11 default layouts. We delete the two Asian, you know, the ones where the text are on the side. So we always include the 9 Microsoft layouts. Now, if they want a subtitle, we build extra layouts because you never want to mess with the base Microsoft one. So we could have title and content, title, subtitle, content would be our version. So it's the same thing. And we'll tell people, hey, you're going to use this one here because you always have subtitles. We're keeping this one because it's the Microsoft standard. Just ignore it, but it's there. So when you insert slides from another deck, it has something to map to. I would say most of our templates have, the one we're working on right now has about 35 layouts, but it's kind of interesting because there's a table of contents that has up to 10 sections. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, when you go to chapter two, the chapter two one automatically highlights, if that makes sense. So, I mean, that added 10 layouts right there where it could be, in many cases, just one, and people give instructions on how to format it.
Nolan, what's the most you've ever, how many layouts do you typically
layouts?
Or how many?
Oh, God, we did one last year with like 80 or 90. It was insane. They just kept wanting more and more. Well, our base is, we always say 6 to 12, and, you know, we leave it loose based on the actual content, you know, what's needed for their type of content. But this like 80 to 91, they just wanted, you know, just like different, they had like 7 or 8 programs that were all color coded. So there were like 7 or 8 dividers, 7 or 8 title slides, and then some layouts needed to be for different programs. And then at one point we were doing circular images and they said, well, why don't we, you know, we don't know if we like circular. I said, that's fine. We can do square. And they said, well, can we do both? I'm like, sure. It's like, I mean, I just, you know, duplicate the slide and change the circles to squares. And now we've just doubled those layouts. So it got, but simpler is better.
It is.
I try to steer people towards, you know, simpler, fewer.
People freeze up. They go into vapor lock from too many options. Like, oh my gosh, which one do I pick?
Well, and most people don't. Okay, so I do the training and I do it with
the most you've done, Sandy? Let's get it.
Okay. I've done around 90. Yeah. And again, like Nolan just described, I had a core set of slides that had, they had a certain color combination, core background color. They had core color differences. So all I literally did was duplicate one set. Mm-hmm. I didn't create multiple masters because that can be a problem in itself. I just duplicated the layouts, changed the colors as needed for the accents, and ended up with 90. But okay, so that is not simple. You cannot train a corporation on how to use 90 layouts. It's very, very confusing. So I think simple is really important.
Yeah.
Organizing them. Like the table of content one I did, you know, we made that its own master slide, you know, so it doesn't show up in the bulk set. It's a separate master slide, just labeled table of contents, TOC.
Yep.
And,
And
therefore, at least it kind of is grouping things to the person.
Yeah, we'll put divider slides in the master, like a big black slide for the default layouts and then the custom ones. And then, you know, if there's like chart layouts, you know, we'll put a big black, it's basically a layout that they could apply if they wanted to. But when they do that pull down, it's easier for them to sort through all 90 slides by, you know, chunking it out into sections.
I think, you know, to answer the question though earlier, because seems like I think the one we've done with the most layouts ever that I can think of was we did this thing with for a Pixar property. And it was, we built the core set. So it was maybe 20, 25 layouts for that. But then what we did is we just literally duplicated the master and it had to be for each character. So it was Toy Story. So, you know, we had the Woody character set. So Woody was the little accent figure on all the layouts. And we had the Buzz character set. And it was really fun. And it was so easy for people to customize the slide decks because they would build it off the core one. Then they could just go in and we showed everybody how to use change layout.
Yes.
It was literally the exact same layout. The only thing that changed was the background and these little accent elements. It was a phenomenal template, but it probably had close to 100 layouts in it. And it was very overwhelming when you first looked at it.
That is what I was so poorly describing with my color changes. It's exactly what I did. Rather
than
characters,
yes,
it was color.
As long as it's all labeled and people know, the training part you give is what's key. It would keep people from, you know, going into kind of a vapor lock. I don't know what to do.
I know.
I'll start from white.
Well, we've had a long episode today because template, and believe me, I feel like we've only scratched the surface. Any last sort of template tricks or ones that you've recently learned? I'm always learning new ones.
You know, I'm going to go with what I just said. We actually take, when we know we have a section of layouts that are very, very similar, we'll create a separate master slide for them. So instead of everything being together, and I'm going to use the table of contents analogy. So we have a table of contents with 10 preset levels. Instead of throwing them into the master, main master, we create a separate master slide called Table of Contents, and it kind of visually breaks it up and gives them an area of their own.
So not a separate layout, a separate master.
A separate master slide.
Yep.
That has with 10 layouts in it. So when you do a little drop down on layouts, they're kind of clustered together. And
that's
a tip.
Okay. Nice. My tip is, you know how you mentioned that you deleted the Asian formats? I'm afraid to delete anything. if there's anything I don't want the users to access, I will cover it with a text box, like a gray text box, and I will type in "do not use." And so is there, when their drop-down menu shows, they'll see these gray ones and they can't type on it.
Wait, re-explain that? That sounds great. I want to make sure I understood.
Sure. So using the Asian layouts, for example, I'll cover it with a gray text box with the words "do not use" in it. So when they
like a full screen? I'm just trying to envision this.
Yes, a full screen.
So you've covered the whole layout.
The whole layout is covered and it says "do not use." And
because you just think it's safer not to delete anything.
Yes. I've heard both sides of the stories where you can't.
You know what? I could use that for other analogies too, Sandy. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Well, like the one where people, they mandate that you use a subtitle layout. Like if it doesn't have a subtitle, it's not corporate. But yet we want to keep the Microsoft standard one, but we could create that and
that's
put a nice
exactly
little.
That's exactly what I was going to suggest to you. Oh.
But you've got to be careful because if you're bringing in slides from another template.
They could get hidden.
They could get hidden or, yeah.
Well, they would be a live slide, but it'd have this big gray box that says do not use, but you can make it informational. Do not use this layout. Change to this and this layout. Oh. Give the instructions.
Oh, you're right. Perfect.
Yeah. And would all the content jump on top of that text box?
Yes, it would because content stays on top of anything that's master slide based.
Okay. My trick that I learned, I think the last summit was at the very last, after the very last custom layout that you make, I put another layout with a big black box that says, do not use any layouts after this slide. And the reason is if you bring in slides from another template, even if you say, you know, use the new source, you don't bring over the other template. So it won't bring over the colors, it won't bring over masters, but what it will do is if there are any extra layouts that do not match up to your template, and again, this is a reason why we want to keep Microsoft layouts so they do match up, but if there are any extra customized ones that are used in slides, it will bring in that layout. It won't bring in the template, but it'll bring in that layout. So at the very end of your deck, you'll get all these random layouts that are not part of your template. And so, but they'll get shoved to the end. So if they'll go after that slide that says, do not use any layouts here. And that's basically an indication. These are not official templated layouts.
I love that.
I'm going to change mine.
Okay. Change.
The other thing we do is when we get this scenario, Nolan, where we get slides, you know, you import them all in and suddenly you've got this whole mess of layouts. You're like, okay, now I got to go through and I got to change them to the real template layouts. The first thing we do is we go into the master slides and we just put a giant green box on all the layouts we don't want to use. It's the same idea as you had there, Sandy. But now when we're going through it, we can literally identify visually which ones are on bad layouts and which ones are not because of this giant green box on them. So we just, you know, those are the ones we chose.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Does that make sense? So we visually identified which are the newly created.
Good idea.
That was actually one of my designers came up with that. We just made it a standard practice because it was so smart. Well, PowerPoint templates are a real thing, and they're not just a collection of slides. They can be distributed with no slides because a true template is all about the master slides, the layouts, the preset options that are used in developing content. I'm also not endorsing distributing a template with no sample slides. I'm just saying that the sample slides are using everything that's on the underside or the back end of it. A true template is an aid to everyone by establishing styling options, consistency parameters, presets to make design faster. I highly endorse pulling in a PowerPoint expert to do something like a technical review of a template before it's distributed so that your beautiful vision for a template is actually usable by everyone. Hey, thanks for joining us this week, and we've got a few more things here. Okay, Q&A corner. I'll start this one because it came direct to me. This one's kind of neat. First of all, I received a message through LinkedIn, which I thought was really awesome. Somebody found us on the on the podcast here, found me on LinkedIn, connected. Raymond Fung, hope I'm pronouncing the name right. In all fairness, I did receive this over a month ago. I meant to include it in an earlier episode, but we had another topic that came up. And then last episode, it was just me and I didn't do one. So Raymond followed up on something we had mentioned briefly before. To quote, you discussed as a side topic as to whether default table styles would remain in a POTX file.
Oh, yeah.
You know what we're talking about?
Yeah, yep. I remember. So when you use the table styles to set a table, an example of a table in a slide, you can in table styles then right click on that icon and set it as the default. However, when you save your PPTX as a POTX or a template file, you lose that default.
But hold on. Okay. That's where it changes. Raymond continues.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether it has been tested again post-podcast, because in that podcast, we did say exactly that. Like, it doesn't work. But I am glad to say, this is Raymond talking, I am glad to say default table styles as of now are retained in POTX files. I've tested this on PowerPoint 2010 and 2016, generated POTX files, and the default table styles remained active as the default.
Awesome.
And I tested it in 2016 and it did work. I saved out one of our templates as a POTX. I opened it up, added a table. It was there.
Well, that's news. Nice. That is big news.
And he finishes with something that I think all three of us have said, but I'll just say it because now it's a whole another person saying it. And I quote, now all we need is PowerPoint to allow customized default tables to be set as a default table and perhaps introduce table styles like chart styles and we can sing praise. So yeah. Raymond, we're on board. You're on board. It's all good. We just need Microsoft on board.
Thank you, Raymond. That was perfect.
Thank you. All right, now it's time for our pro and tech tips. Sandy, do you have something this week?
I do. Since we're talking about templates, oftentimes we want that top level in the default text, click to type text. We don't want a bullet point there.
Yes.
So we'll remove it, and we can no longer use our tab option to navigate between levels. We have to use increase list level or decrease list level. Well, working with the pros in the industry, Echo Swinford and Julie Turberg, they uncovered zero width space bullet, which really isn't a bullet. But if you put that there, you have zero width and it behaves like it acts like a bullet. And now you can use your tab key to navigate between the text levels.
If you don't understand it, this is like so brilliant. It's amazing. I mean, it really, really is. You have to, I guess you can't see it in action because what it does is it doesn't do anything.
Yes. It gives you flush left or paragraph type style, and it doesn't break the placeholder, where just removing the bullet point literally breaks the placeholder.
You can't. So really quick, how do you do it, Sandy?
It's insert... I'm sorry, you go to your bullet dialog and under custom bullets, let's see here. Oh, of course, you put me on the spot.
Oh, it's so, this is awesome.
Okay, go to the custom bullet dialog, choose normal text from Unicode. You have to have it from Unicode.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the key. FYI, it's character code 200B. B as in Bob.
My favorite. My favorite Unicode.
I will endorse the book we talked about that Juliet Ecker wrote.
Yes. And it's all described in there and a thousand other things are as well. I use that trick as well.
That is
Sandy, it's very useful.
It's in our master build template, our process one. I literally stole it right from Julian Echo. Here's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And if we need it. And that's a great one because that causes so many problems.
It really does.
With custom templates. Okay, so mine is, and I'm actually have to thank Nolan because I didn't realize this was out there, and we're now using it across everybody. So Adobe Stock, which is what we're using currently for our image resource for the company, they've added an add-in that opens up a little action pane on the right-hand side, and you can search for all the images in your Adobe Stock account. So if we need an image to put into a presentation, we used to open up Adobe Creative Cloud app, type in the item we wanted, the web page would open up to Adobe Stock, we'd be logged into our account. Each person would have their own account they'd be logged into. It's a team account for Adobe Stock. There's the word I'm looking for. They would find what they want. They would download the image. Then they would put it into PowerPoint. They had format and stylize, and then they would continue on the presentation. Now what you can do, just click the under insert. There's an Adobe Stock button. After you add the add-in, it opens up basically an action pane that is a direct search of the website. And you can insert preview images and, you know, full images based on your license count right into PowerPoint. It's thanks, Nolan. That was like a really cool thing because it's saving a lot of time on the design side.
Cool. So my tip is master related, but this is where you can use a layout for a one-off slide that will save you time. So let's say you're using a regular master or whatever. You're just creating a slide that could be just a single slide without a master. And let's say you want six circle photos, you know, evenly spaced on the page, and you've got the images on your desktop, you're going to put them in. If you were to do it just on a blank slide, you would be bringing in these photos, cropping them into circles, setting the aspect ratio, you know, moving things around and then aligning them. And it's just going to take a lot of time. And then if you want to swap in a new photo, you got to do the same thing for that one. So here's where going into the master and just making a one-time use layout, you know, that won't be used for any other slides, go into your master, make a layout, put in a picture placeholder, make it a circle, add any effects you want to, duplicate that on the layout, you know, align them, whatever, make it look like you want it to look. Now go back to the slide, apply that layout, and now you can just drag in or, you know, file, insert, whatever, drag in these images right into these picture placeholders and they will auto crop. Oh. That's the advantage of a picture placeholder over a content placeholder.
Yes.
You'll bring the photos in, they'll auto crop, they'll look great, and they'll all be aligned. You can still move things around, but then if you do and you mess up, you can just hit reset. If you want to swap an image out, delete the photo and bring a new one in. It's a great use of a layout.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio full of talented designers that focus on presentation design. Check us out at www.tlccreative.com, facebook.com/TLC Creative, and thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, where you can get lots of free downloads and goodies if you subscribe. And if you're looking for on-site customized training for presentation or data viz, drop us a line. That's what we do.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz, my blog at pptwizblog, and the guild at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandy Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.